It is now time for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. Our guest has arrived, Anthony Turner. This Saturday morning, the constitutional status and the role of Jamaica's Governor General within the monarchical system of government in Jamaica. It is said that the Governor General is appointed by the monarchy. What is really his role? Is the Governor General role a symbolic role? Well, Professor Louis Moyston, no-nonsense Professor Louis Moyston, is going to be our guest. Introduce our guest, Anthony Turner.
Well, as you said, our special guest on Mic Check this morning is Professor Louis Moyston. And Professor Moyston is a university lecturer who is currently preparing three major research projects for publication. One of them is about the Rastafarian uprising, L.T. Howell, and the rise of early Rastafari during the anti-colonial struggles. The other focuses on the history of Jamaica from the period 1933 to 1938. And Professor Moyston is presently researching and writing and looking to work for the University of Delaware at an off-campus location that is being set up in Jamaica. And Dr. Moyston, who previously lectured at the University of the West Indies, well, he is the recipient of the prestigious Silver Pen Award. And this is from the Jamaica Gleaner. And he is also a former radio broadcaster and presenter at Best FM in Jamaica. So we welcome Professor Moyston to Grooving Radio this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Professor. How are you this Saturday morning, sir?
Yes, Frank. Good morning and welcome. Just one correction. Just a slight correction. Mm-hmm. The program between myself and Delaware did not work out, but that was something good. I really thank you very much for that useful introduction. And just to tell you that I'm teaching at the university here now and with two courses, an introduction to African politics. Mm-hmm. and Garveyism.
Wow.
And probably sometime we can have some discussion on that kind of thing, because even before I really go on further, I want you to know that I am looking at doing a research now. Mm-hmm. On bringing back the Pan-African movement to the African diaspora.
Wow.
Because we have Finnish business, especially racism in Latin America, mm-hmm. that the World Cup has really brought out in our presence, and we're discussing it about Argentina, mm-hmm. and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You look at racism in Brazil and the other areas. Mm-hmm. That because all those countries do not have a large body of black population, it kind of handicaps their ability to struggle. So we need to look back at that kind of thing. I'll have some more work on that for next semester. But I want to thank you this morning.
Yes, sir.
On this issue regarding the Constitution, the Governor General. And I just want to say to you that when people are thinking about developing the Constitution itself, mm-hmm. they must pay attention to history. Mm-hmm. They must pay attention to the nurturing of social, economic, mm-hmm. and cultural institutions that disperse power in the society, that equip the citizens morally, intellectually, and practically for citizenship. In very short, mm-hmm. all I'm saying here is that 1962 Constitution of Jamaica should have reflected these kind of qualities as remain as our brother in Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, described it in the 1950s as flag independence.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I use that background now to touch the, I'll speak on the Jamaican Constitution itself. And I will go right into the responsibilities of the Governor General.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will give you some of my critique on the Constitution.
Indeed.
And in the end, please remind me, I will talk about possible constitutional changes for presidents,
indeed,
presidential republics,
indeed,
and how that will affect the politics in Jamaica.
So you have laid out
now,
you have laid out what you're going to talk about. The floor is yours, Professor Moyston.
All right. Now, in a nutshell, you see, this constitution of Jamaica, there's a long history of constitutional developments in Jamaica from the 1960s. From about the 1660s. And that 1660s constitutional approach, transportation in Jamaica, importation in terms of rules from Britain into this country, it probably lasted until after 1838. Then you see the changes from 1838 to 1865. So between 1838 and 65, there have been several attempts in terms of changing constitution. And these changes are always relating to the politics of power. To change the constitution in which the elite white planter class could control the society even after emancipation. And then you need to look at the logic of this by asking yourself, what is the history of black participation in politics in Jamaica since 1838? What? That's a question. Anyhow, what we saw there in 1962, and I must say, up to 1954, there was this representative, this black lawyer. And I say black lawyer because his name is Jack Smith, one of the most fantastic representatives. Not Jack Smith Jr., Jack Smith Sr. And he has been around from in the 1930s. And there, I think that he contributed to the development of new constitutional activities during and prior to 1944, during that period when this whole universal adult suffrage was supposed to come around. Then came in Manley with the PNP and stuff like that. But in 1962, there was this bipartisan kind of thing. Now, I just want to discuss one aspect of this bipartisan thing, you know, because in recent months and days in Jamaica, the Jamaica Labour Party has been quarreling with poor people. They have been describing poor people in certain ways, and they have been saying that because the opposition does not agree with them on certain things, the opposition loves the other poor people and criminal and stuff like that. But I want it to be very clear that the person that held the power in the constitutional debate, the private constitutional debate in 1961 to 1962, was a man from the planter and the commerce class known as Mr. Aschenheim. And this Mr. Aschenheim was also chairman of the board of directors of the Gleaner. Good? And we're talking about now someone who is a land person. This is a man who really understands the American Constitution, because many of these people are influenced by the politics in America. Good? And he was the one who represented the Jamaica Labour Party and stood out that rights in the Constitution should be property rights and not individual rights. In other words, he was saying, make sure that private property gets protected for two reasons. One, the history of slavery, and two, because they always see PNP within this communistic fashion in terms of seizing land. not only seizing land, you know, but taking over land appropriately for land reform. So they wanted protection, the most important thing in that constitution, I think, because if you're talking about people that were slaves and all this kind of thing, then you need to think about the priority of the individual rights. Mm-hmm. In very clear terms, that this thing exploitation and stuff like that took place, and it should never happen again because the Constitution will defend you. Remember what I started out by saying, that the constitutional makers must pay attention to the nurturing history, social institution, etc., the culture. So therefore, I do not understand the statement that Mr. Norman Manley made. Like it was 10 against 1. And the 1 triumphed in terms of the outcome of the Constitution. Well, but this Constitution, whatever they discuss in Jamaica, is secondary to me because the one that is written. This now, you know, what was approved and sent to England and sent come back now as a second hearing, you know, second schedule of the Jamaican Constitution, which is an order in council, 1962 in Buckingham Palace. And also the West Indies Act of 1962. So, what you see, what is very clear, they got a draft, they send back a second schedule, and there's no time for you read it and send it back to them, you know. It's that second schedule, which is called an order in council.
But hold on, Professor. Hold on 1 second there. Hold your point there. Now, didn't the government of Jamaica form a new ministry to take a look at our constitution recently? Huh?
Yeah, but we could kind of leave that out until now the end, okay, and respond to it now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to break the flow, right? So, now you're saying this now. Lawyers have problems reading the constitution. Educated people have problems reading the constitution. The Constitution is written in very old English. It has no mention of anything about the people and the citizens of Jamaica. It has 12 chapters. Let me give you, chapter 4 speaks to the issue regarding the Governor General, which you asked about specifically. So under chapter 4 of the Jamaican Constitution, the Governor General is given authority as a representative of Her Majesty the Queen. And his function, to name the date of general election, to appoint ministers and assign them responsibilities, to appoint permanent secretaries, the Attorney General, senators, privy councillors, Chief Justice, President of the Court of Appeal, Director of Public Prosecution and the Service Commission. So there's a function. But this function takes place on the advice of the Prime Minister. It's not like the Governor General take up in pen and say these people are going to be so. It is the Prime Minister, and in some cases with consultation with the leader of the opposition, they make these kind of recommendations. So he functions, he functions at the advice of the Prime Minister. It means that his role is ceremonial. Even in the case of bills that pass into law, he's the one that signs. But he does not direct the politics. So what you find now is that the Governor General, when you look at Parliament now, you're looking at the structure of government now. We tell him function, right? Now, the structure of government now consists of His Majesty the King, represented by Governor General, the two houses, the two legislative houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And nominated Senate and the elected representative. So you have two houses. You have the Senate and you have the House of Representatives. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Then now the Governor General, which is the Queen, is at the head. So when you have the opening of Parliament, the speech, once a year, you give this speech. I don't remember what they called it. Must be the royal speech or some kind of speech like that that he gives, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, the Prime Minister is also, the Governor General is also required to appoint the Prime Minister, right?
Indeed,
as the member of the House of Representatives, who is best able to command the support of majority of the member of that House. Well,
mm-hmm.
But remember again, when Mr. Sangster died, the Governor General Sir Clifford Campbell appointed the Honorable Robert Charles Lightburn as Prime Minister, and Charter said no. The Governor General had the right to do it in crisis.
And Edward Seaga said
no. Because the government had no leader.
Mm.
Huh?
And Edward Seaga said no to that?
No to that. They took it to the vote. And the man who became favorite after a while, who won by one vote, was Mr. Hugh Shearer. Good? So when we look, even if the governor, but this is something that happened, you know, the history is there. So I'm just saying that even though the Constitution gives him that right,
mm-hmm.
in the end, it is the political party that will advise him. Good? So he selects, again, members of the cabinet and stuff like that. But at the same time, it is those people who the Prime Minister,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also the leader of the opposition. They are the one who advise him. So he's a rubber stamp.
Well, you know,
that's what it is.
You know, Professor, yes. I am in the class. Anthony, we're in the class. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an historical class, an history class this morning with Professor Louis Moyston. So, given all what you have said, Professor, about the role of the Governor General, it seems that it comes right back now, Anthony, that the Governor General function also on the advice of the Prime Minister. But the Prime Minister and his wife is not head of state. And the Governor General, and the Governor General, who's appointed by the Queen, by the monarchy, because the Queen is gone, it's now a king, right? You would think now that the appointed person from the monarchy would have been the leader of the country. But, Professor, not so. The Governor General is a figurehead. Hmm?
No, I think what you wanted to say also, listening to what you're saying,
yeah.
is that the elected leader should be the head of government. Should be head of state.
Right.
The elected leader should be head of state. But it is not so.
Mm.
So, Professor.
So what you find, countries with enlightened leader, like a Ghana, for example, as soon as he got in, and he declared, looked at it in terms of neo-colonialism, flag independence. Then what he did now was to break away, to fulfill the true definition of decolonization and broke away totally from the monarchy, and the elected leader in that country becomes the head of state and president.
Mm. Anthony.
Yes, so Professor, given all that you've said and fact that the Prime Minister is elected by the people and the Queen or King now, they are the ones who appoint the Governor General. Who has more power, the Prime Minister or the Governor General?
No, well, look here. Once you recognize that the Governor General has no power,
mm-hmm.
it is the Prime Minister that has power, but he cannot use that power
as
without
he
the approval of the governor general. Certain powers.
Yeah.
Things like laws and all of this kind of thing. But then again, even if it's spending our money and doing, I mean, what we see the prime minister doing now is that the prime minister is like an authoritarian personal and a wrecking train going down doing things
mm-hmm.
on his own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What you need to look on is something simple like this. White people never want to give black people any kind of power. They develop a system in Jamaica, the system, that would prevent black people from coming to power, because it is not only the governor general you need to worry about. You need to worry about the Senate too. Because in the first time the Senate came out of what you call a governor's council, the man them that big man them that the governor used to select and put in there, and it was the same thing when the government came in between 1944 and 54, the same kind of big people in the state get into the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody votes for the Senate, no circle.
Mm-hmm.
But the law can't pass it, the Senate don't pass it.
Oh, wow. You're gaining
the issue is.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the issue is, just like what you have it in the United States of America,
mm-hmm.
what you call that thing, and the voting for electoral college.
Yes.
Is that the system is afraid of a popular person to become leader, and especially in our country, a popular black person. And mm-hmm. this is why it's set up that way. The Constitution is a backward and a racist document in this country.
Mm. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, you're gaining knowledge, which is cholesterol free right here on Grooving Radio. We are in the class of Professor Louis Moyston as we take a look. We take a look at the status and the role of the Governor General of in Jamaica, appointed by the monarchy, and how this all works. Something very, very interesting you said, and I want to know, I'm thinking now, what year would have this would have been when Hugh Shearer was named Prime Minister? Edward Seaga ruled at that time in the Jamaica Labour Party. If I'm not mistaken, he wasn't the leader of the party then, Professor Moyston. So for him to call that shot, when the Governor General appointed a Prime Minister, which the Governor General had constitutional right.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
What was the role of Edward Seaga then in the Jamaica Labour?
Right. Seaga was always looking power. And Seaga was a man who believed that he could understand the culture of the Jamaican people and use it and control them and work him into power.
Mm.
He was one of those politicians like Trump who used fear and drag fear into people's heart and stuff like that to get in.
Wow.
He knew that if a Robert Lightburn became the Prime Minister of Jamaica, he would have no chance to become leader.
Wow.
But if Hugh Shearer, who is a lesser figure,
mm-hmm.
became Prime Minister, he could get him talks them to tell Hugh Shearer, say, yo, I tell you, come out for the training now, the boss time for rain now, because I saw it go.
Wow.
But
yeah.
Now I want you to understand this, you know.
Mm.
There are two politicians in Jamaica that I respect 100%. One of them named Robert Lightburn, and the next one named Michael Manley.
Mm.
Mr. Lightburn at that time, because that was the issue that separated him from the Jamaica Labour Party and separated him from the most important political work in Jamaica since emancipation. What he was doing, he was sending students to England and Scotland to study engineering. I know students from St. Thomas and Moran Bay School who went on these scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And he was building factories. He built Goodyear Tire Factory in St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Good?
Mm-hmm.
Just at the time when Sir Jalan closed down, he built a whole lot more factory in a yellow stand thing, because what he was doing, he was preparing for a post-plantation society in Jamaica.
Mm.
A society in which industry would lead it He was never a man to support tourism. And you can look it up. And I will tell you this, Virginia, St. Thomas was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
One factory alone in a parish can transform that entire parish.
Indeed. Indeed.
Good?
Indeed.
And I'm pleased to say that I see Ghana as a program now named One District, One Factory. And I hope the politicians in Jamaica will take a page out of Mr. Robert Lightburn thing and Ghana. But the point I'm telling you is when people who are greedy for power use whatever force them have an organization and the thugs that them have, because that's how the politics run.
Right.
The only time there was ever an election for leader in the GLP is recently between Manayard and the Prime Minister. Manayard is the Minister of Transport, Shaw.
Hardly Shaw.
So you must understand in terms of it's just stronghold business and thing, but the important thing is that Jamaica was deprived from a leader.
Yeah.
That could have made us into a Singapore today.
Indeed.
Over political power.
Indeed. Professor, hold your thoughts there. The computers are going to take over in 30 seconds. When we come back after the 11 o'clock hour, we'll pick up the conversation with Professor Louis Moisten. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. My name is Ras Clem. A thought-provoking conversation this morning.
Peace. And this is the original Chronics representing, and I say, you're listening to Grooving Radio with the original Ras Clem on 93.5 WVIP FM. Keep it grooving, and we will keep it moving all the time, every time. Ease out.
And thank you so much, Chronics, for bringing us up at the top of the hour here for the final 25 minutes of our Grooving Radio's presentation this Saturday morning. Another thought-provoking conversation. The conversation this morning, the constitutional status and the role of Jamaica's Governor General within this monarchical system of government in Jamaica. Professor Louis Moisten is our special guest, and he has made it clear of the symbolic role. Yes, it's a symbolic role that the Governor General is playing as we speak. Welcome back, Professor.
Yes, because it's not only the Governor General that's symbolic, you know. Because one of the first things I remember I learned in my introduction to sociology, right here in Brooklyn, in Medgar, was that a symbol represents, it represents everything except itself. You know? So what is also symbolic are the values. The values that the Constitution kind of puts forward, you see? Because the largest section of the people of Jamaica reject the European values. As you can see, that manifestation coming out only after Rastafari movement in the 1930s. A rejection of European values, and those values were enshrined in the Constitution. Look at it this way. When you look at the American Constitution, you see, the beginning of the Constitution, a preamble, right? When you look at the South African Constitution, you see a preamble. And one of the things that the preamble helps to do is to build a healthy type of national spirit, you know, based on real, what you call, patriotism, you know, based on genuine love for country, pride of the history and the culture of that particular country. None of this kind of thing reflected in the Jamaican Constitution. Good? None. No kind of little preamble saying, boy, we have been through some serious kind of history and we condemn that past, and that past will never return, and we will do everything in our powers to ensure that we redress those lingering consequences of slavery and colonialism. That's what an independent constitution is supposed to do. It is supposed to inspire decolonization. And I just want to say something, you know, is that It is the Constitution and the values around the Constitution. And I like to use the United States Constitution as a symbol to discuss this kind of thing. That its Constitution and associated political activities represented a good approach to decolonization. They broke away fully from the British system and developed their own. It is not whether or not I like their own I'm talking about. No, you know. I just want to look at the thing as a form to explain something.
Go ahead, Professor. Go ahead.
Good? And one of the first things the American did when they come out, Mark, you know, I mean, with all of his imperfection with slavery and thing, you know, was to take the church out of education. Develop their own educational philosophy. One that can develop the new man in America and a society that will be capable to develop itself, given the world of land and mineral that them thief and all of these kind of things and stuff like that, right? But in terms of looking at it as a constitution in a post-colonial order, the Jamaican Constitution is more conservative than the American.
Wow.
Let us move and look at the world, because you see, it did not provide any kind of opportunity, you know, for the black people to develop their national self-identity, you know. It supported this issue of out of many one people. Out of many one people now is that framework that they use to suppress black majority in this country.
Wow.
When I just come a country, I come a town rather. We used to see two signs paint black on the wall when I'm driving the bus for work. And one of the signs is simple this: black majority time now. And the next one is birth control comes to kill out black people. I never forget those two. And that was like in 1973, so sometime around then. What? The 1962 election, two persons, Rassam Brown, and I always don't remember this Pan-Africanist with the People's Progressive Party, who led the People's Progressive Party in 1962. Well, tip of the tongue experience, really. He and Sam Brown went into the election not because they thought that they could win or get a lot of vote. They went in it for historical purpose to make the people know some black people in Jamaica. What? Because there wasn't anything in our independence and constitution for black people. In fact, Jimmy Cliff, in an interview in a book named This Is Reggae Music, and I'm asking all the music to change from ska to rocksteady to reggae. He said, well, ska was a celebratory music, you know. And people glad that them get them little independence and them jump up and dance. But after independence, people realize that there wasn't anything in their independence with them, so they started to look into themselves, man. Mm-hmm. And this introspection now began to reflect in the music, resistance music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we saw that in the 1960s. And then that resistance now was about to be crushed by this year, man, here, you, Shira.
Yeah. Watch your time, Professor. We have 10 minutes. Go ahead.
Good?
Mm-hmm.
No, what we saw, no, because we say all of this thing in Jamaica, remember, it was a constitutional change and everything, they have to keep power. That they don't want black people to forget it. In the 1960s, on the whole black power movement in America come, all right, what they did, that share of government, ban books coming from America, movies, the spook who sat by the door and all this kind of thing. Well, and at that time, no, you know, the black consciousness movement come at a time to help the government and the society against the whole rule by culture. Just like what you see what I know, them days it was nice. And the music used to reflect but the consciousness don't come. People like Alton Ellis used to sing about the rude boy business at that time, and at the time, the Wailers used to sing pro rude boy music, and then after a while, the music start to switch. Then you see the black conscious movement start to move into the ghetto and organize rastas and things like this now. And you sure say, all right now this guy near Walter Rodney, you know, come back in our country, you know. But now I make him come back, you know, because he's a main troublemaker, the man in Ban Rodney. But the thing with it, what the CIA report said, that the Jamaican government and Jamaican police and the US CIA wanted to frame Rodney. That Rodney wanted to use rastas to kill tourists in Montego Bay. This is what the report say, you know, when me I say. So there is always all the time anybody from inner government ever pay attention to black people in this country and defend black people in this country, that the national politics became the foreign policy and the support for black liberation struggles was Michael Manley. The only time in this country. And it became an offense to the Monroe Doctrine and Manifest Destiny. Because after British imperialism, then the American imperialism supposed to come in. So we are saying today, my own position is that we need constitutional changes in Jamaica, but we need to have the kind of political education that will bring the people, because the same kind of people who believe in a Russian ship propaganda in 1962, they will believe in any kind of propaganda now and shrink something that is bad for something that is good. So we need a president who's an executive president. And that president can select cabinet members who are not necessarily MP. And that system would force MP to go work in them constituency.
Indeed.
President, we need to run this thing at tight, you know.
Indeed.
Every MP is supposed to can tell you how much picnic they have school at a different level, how much of them leave, where them going. You need to find something to track the movement of people in this country, brethren. We just have gone to let a river run.
Indeed. Professor Anthony, you still in the class?
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's my take.
So much. I've come up this morning, and this whole thing about the racism thing in Jamaica, Professor. I recently did a program with Professor Rosalie Hamilton, and it seems as if we're going to have to revisit this with Professor Louis Moisten, because it is serious. And you just mentioned something about what every MP should know about their constituency. Instead of these MPs who have their businesses on the side that they go to every day, whether they're a lawyer, whether they're doctors and farmers and everything else, and they're forgetting about the daily operation and running off their constituency. That is why today, when you listen to the news, you have 7,000 students still missing from school. And poor COVID, I get all the blame. Everything is COVID. COVID do this, COVID do that. Yeah, COVID may have disrupted the system, yes.
I'm sad to say, you see, that sir, there's just one more basic thing that the Constitution and the government deal with is the culture of black people in this country.
I'll give you 5 minutes for that. 5 minutes.
Yes. You see, one of the things, you know, with people, you know, in slavery, you know, Bridget, is a whip them used to use to teach black people, you know. They couldn't communicate except with a whip. Black people learn to communicate from different backgrounds with themselves and create their own language. That's how you go. And then around that language now will be a culture in Jamaica that becomes the national culture. And the basis of that national culture is a language. And the language is not recognized. And then education is not decolonized. So both of them have to deal with culture right now, you see. Because the language, when you decolonize education, you put a new philosophy that is emancipative. and you put a philosophy that will recognize that the people speak a language that is not English. So therefore, since education is in English, you need to teach them English so they can learn it. So you have to teach English like a second language, like how you teach French and Spanish, and they learn it very well, sir.
One thing, Professor.
Anthony, the professor has 5 minutes to wrap this conversation. Go ahead, ask the question. Five minutes to wrap.
Just, we're talking about symbolic stuff and all that, and it just brought me to this whole thing that the Queen, the honors medal that the Queen gave to the Governor General with the angel with the foot on the neck of the black man. So it's by design. Yeah.
It is by design.
Well, that is how these people operate, and they show symbol of power, you know. Have you ever seen any picture a black man kill white people in Jamaica? But you will see picture of white people kill black people all over. And the only artist that will paint picture of black killing white are the Asian artists. And by the Asian Revolution is a beacon to the black liberation struggles in the Americas. So.
So, Professor.
Right. I will send you a paper I'm doing on racism in Argentina and stuff like that, because I think it's going to be important, you know?
Indeed.
And this will come after the World Cup, because I'm writing it with conjunction. I'm watching World Cup now. Netherlands 2, USA 0.
Indeed.
Have a good day, my brothers.
Professor Louis Moistan. Boy, you have stirred up the corporate era. You have stirred up the New York City tri-state era this morning, Louis Moistan. And we must, because I saw something regarding World Cup and in terms of African players on teams participating in this World Cup. And it's amazing how many countries have an African-born player on their team. Well, indeed. Professor Louis Moistan, this lecture this morning was indeed well taken, sir. I thank you for your time. I'm going to allow you to go back to watch your World Cup. I know you're a big sportsman, so I thank you for the last 45 minutes, sir. Well spent. And the audience, based on all these messages that I'm getting, Louis Moistan, well done, sir. Well done.
One love. No, sir. I really love.
But you know, Anthony, as professor, is an Irish love. If Jamaica is an Irish love country, right? How come? I want you to answer this question, Anthony. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Louis Moistan joining us for Mic Check this Saturday morning. If Jamaica is a one love country, Anthony, how come we have so much killing and so much brutal things happening in Jamaica? Where's the love?
Boy, that is something that I'm still trying to understand, because for a small country, 144 square miles, and so many murders and killing, and we know that Jamaica have a lot of love and we're Irish and all that, but there's something, I think there's some molly popping, drug using thing that is messing with the people's mind also. Because these are not normal people to do some of the atrocities and the killings and murdering that is happening. Murdering baby, dog. It just don't make sense.
Listening to Professor Louis Moistan, Anthony, give me one thing that stand out to you that Louis Moistan said this
morning. Well, he spoke about the whole racism and the whole constitution. Everything in there is really to oppress all people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's by design. Mm-hmm. So everything, I mean, as simple as that emblem is, and it's kind of disguised as something that they're honoring you, when in fact they're just further oppressing you. And that is part of the constitution. It seems like we're getting something, but in reality, we never really get nothing.
We got nothing. But one of the things that I'm thinking of, which is going to send me into another research mode, Anthony, is what he said about Edward Seaga. And when the Governor General appointed Lightburn as Prime Minister. And I tell people this all the time, you know, that go back and look at 1962. August 6, 1962, a young 20-something-year-old politician was seated at the table. Do you know who that young 24-year-old politician was, Anthony Turner? It was Edward Seaga.
Mm.
So as Louis Moisten said, Edward Seaga was always in search of power.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people can say Edward Seaga should be a national hero too. Because he was seated, Anthony, at the mm-hmm. table. And for him to block a governor general appointment, pick as prime minister, it's a sad, sad situation. Another thought-provoking conversation on Groovin' Radio.
Yeah.
Sounds of Taurus Riley.
Give us the teaching of Marcus Chiave. Keberenikas means
glory.
Glory of kings. Give
I and I, Selassie, I and keep the image of your lies.
For yourself.
Indeed.
Deep without a vision perish like suicide.
Strength.
You tell me it's not about color. Still you refuse to take the picture off the wall. All you do is trick the brothers and keep them confused. They don't know who to call on in this spiritual war.
You know, Anthony, I just don't want people to misunderstand me, you know. I am who I am. And I will never ever march to the beat of anyone else's drum. Look at the amount of lies, Anthony.
Mm-mm.
That we have been told. And I'm trying to dispel some of these lies. But them said the Rasta boy crazy.
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to call me crazy. I'm not going to call me crazy. On this day, Anthony, let's not forget, 1976, on December 3rd, an assassination attempt was made on the life of Robert Nesta Marley alongside his wife Rita Marley and manager Don Taylor. They were all shot inside the Tuff Gong studio, which was Marley's resident at the time. Until next Saturday morning, Anthony. Peace,
hey,
love.
One thing
real
I
quick,
want to mention, one of the political stalwarts of Westmoreland, Mr. Russell Hammond, I'm just told that he passed away. So
wow.
I'm going to share that.
Yeah, man.
All
until
right,
next
talk
week.
To you
one
next
love.
Week.
One. Take care, Anthony. Ladies and gentlemen, waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it's going to be the Wake Up Radio team. My name is Ras Clem. Groovin' Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume and Christopher Roberts. Groovin' Radio was hosted by Ras Clem, contributing to a presentation over the last 2.5 hours. I got to say thanks to our musical we presented the music of Pam Hall this Saturday morning. The Old Farmers Association, they're getting ready for their annual fundraising gala next week Saturday inside the Marriott inside Stanford. Their president Norma Jarrett joined us along with their VP Miss Donna. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, inside the Green Tree Country Club, Dr. Roy Street and his team will have their annual fundraising gala. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner with Mr. Never Graham sitting in for Mr. Jovan Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for Entertainment Report, and he provided the bio for our very special mic check guest, Professor, no nonsense Professor Louis Moisten. It was a lecture this morning, not an interview. A lecture by Professor Louis Moisten. The conversation, the symbolic role of the Governor General and the status of the Governor General and the role he plays in Jamaica. As I said before, waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. Irie Jam comes in at 1. At 6 p.m., it is going to be Link Up. And at 8, Soundchat Radio. I'll see you tomorrow evening at 6. Walk good. One love.